to Logically Local, the show that highlights local issues and solutions to sustainability problems.
In this globalized world, we believe that we need tailored local solutions for greater sustainability challenges. And Logically Local brings you stories from people, organizations, and communities who are doing their bit to contribute.
We are your hosts. I am Trisan Kisekya.
I'm Mayuri Fukan.
And today, we are going to talk about pathways for climate action in Northeast India with Dhriti Pathak.
This year, delayed monsoons could bring in drought-like situations in Nagaland, as per the state's Minister for Agriculture. Changes in rainfall patterns are just one of the many ways in which climate change manifests. Northeast region is abundant with natural resources. It is a part of the Indo-Myanmar biodiversity hotspot. Here, livelihood of people are highly dependent on agriculture and natural resources. Climatic changes impact various sectors such as fisheries, water resources, agriculture, and even forestry. It kind of changes the nature of disasters and impacts life and livelihood of people. So it is very important to build people's adaptive capabilities to climate change.
Dhriti is a climate science researcher with expertise in natural disasters and climate change adaptation. She's from Guwahati, Assam, and has been involved in various work related to climate proofing and capacity building of people. Welcome to the podcast, Dhriti, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Trisanki and Mayuri. I think this is a great initiative and I'm very happy to be a part of it.
Dhriti, so you are from Assam, you are from Northeast India, and you have been working in the climate change sector for the last couple of years. So as Mayuri has mentioned that the entire Northeast is a biodiversity hotspot, yet we also hear that it's highly vulnerable to climate change, right?
Yeah.
What are these vulnerabilities that Northeast has in regards to climate change?
Okay, so I'll, start by saying that you are right, the Northeast region as a geography is very highly ecologically sensitive zone. And as over the years, the impacts of climate change are exacerbating, the region has become highly prone to climate risks and even disasters, climatic disasters more so. So in the Northeast region specifically, if you look at climate impacts, it could be seen in the form of changes in temperatures, changes in seasonal durations, precipitation patterns, and even increased in frequency and intensity of climatic disasters, climate-induced disasters. Now, we have in the Northeast, like you have mentioned already, we have huge forests, wetlands, and these form habitats for countless species, right? And very small changes in the climate would imply huge disruptions in these existing habitats. And as such, climate change would have very severe consequences in this region due to its ecological sensitivity. And in terms of vulnerability, if you look at it, so now we come to the people's part of climate change, where the region is also such that, like you said, a majority of the population are dependent on agriculture and natural resources as a primary source of livelihood and even sustenance. And these sectors, these things are highly sensitive to climate and will therefore definitely be significantly affected by any change in the climate whatsoever. So this ultimately makes the population very highly vulnerable to climate change. And our current stage of development also doesn't help the case because, with much of our population having little or no access to things like basic facilities like, safe drinking water, alternate livelihood options, etc., our capacity to adapt to such changes in the climate is also very low, making us as a region very vulnerable to climate change.
Right, and I think it has been highlighted by various reports recently also, this climate vulnerability of the region. For example, DST also came up with a report last month which assessed the climate vulnerability of different districts, where northeastern states like Assam were, according to the report, they were considered to be highly vulnerable to climate change. And as you mentioned, it's a lot of things like the geography and the vulnerability in terms of the resource dependency of the people. And also the development indicators itself are so low, right, that we do not have the capacity or the ability to be climate resilient because our economic indicators or the development is also low as a region.
And here I would also like to bring in the point of, you know, availability of resources. Okay? So as we know that there are many ways in which we can deal with the climate and the knowledge is freely available. We know that, you know, adaptation strategies would be this, mitigation strategies would be this. And yet, as developing countries and developing regions, we often are not able to take these up despite having the knowledge to do that, right? And so here, as developing regions, we have resource crunch as a major problem. And besides that, our priorities, and rightly so, are developmental interventions, first and foremost. So how do we bring about, so we don't really prioritize climate action over our developmental priorities. So how do we then get to actually bringing about climate action into the picture? We have to, you know, tweak our developmental policies to be climate sensitive, or rather we climate proof them to incorporate and address the changes in the climate. So, go ahead.
But don't you think that development policies and climate policies, they are not either or, but they have to go together? Because, as we all know that climate change makes, as you rightly mentioned, it makes the population and the region vulnerable. And especially for a resource-dependent region such as Northeast, where a lot of people still depend on the primary sector like agriculture and similar sectors. So any changes in climate would have impacts on these sectors, massive impacts. So they cannot be separate plans. They have to go together in order to ensure also the development of the people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying, ki, you know, we need to have a climate aspect in our developmental policies so that it's, you know, it's sensitive to the changes in the climate. So earlier, say, if developmental policies in our state would, for the agriculture sector, for instance, would include, you know, giving subsidized seeds or, you know, saplings to farmers. Making it climate sensitive would mean giving and promoting climate resilient varieties of a crop, so that that makes your farmer population less vulnerable because their crops are less vulnerable to the changes in the climate. Of course, a lot of study needs to be done, and from a bottom up approach, because climate change, the impacts of climate change are very region specific and localized. So a bottom-up approach in understanding the vulnerabilities and the region-specific impacts would go a long way in framing our future developmental plans and policies and making them, you know, and mainstreaming, I'd say, climate action into our developmental policies.
Yeah, I think that's very well explained how climate-proofing actually can take place. But there are, you know, various agencies that takes care of or does the work of implementation of various schemes and services for the state. So in some ways, I also think that there is a need for capacity building and strengthening of the institutions itself. By that, go ahead.
Because, definitely. I think capacity building at the grassroots level is very important, especially for things like climate change, because, you know, are the people who are most affected, like our farmers and the people on the ground, they know, they can see that something is changing, but they don't know what to do about it. So capacity building workshops in this regard would go a long way in you know, providing appropriate solutions, and not just solutions, suggestions. There can be even focus group discussions where farmers also can be asked to, you know, give their ideas on how we can manage this better. So it will be an inclusive, a participative form of forwarding climate action.
So, Hrithik, do you know of any example of these kind of activities, if they're happening in Northeast, climate proofing, climate adaptation or mitigation, any particular policy or program you'd like to talk about, which is happening, which you think is inspiring or worth mentioning to the audience here?
Yeah,
in terms of climate action.
See, I think the State Action Plan on Climate Change is definitely a very important document. And for India, in the context of India, it's very relevant because being a very large country, we cover varied geographies and terrains and have different, very diverse climate across regions. And the impacts of climate change also vary. Like we have the Himalayan belt, we have the coastal region, we have the Northeast region. So these all face separate climate concerns, and a one-size-fit-all solution for climate change would not work in this regard. So I think the State Action Plan is a great tool for driving climate action in the sub-national level in India. Now, having said that, the State Action Plan, it presents, I feel, to the states an opportunity to not just identify their own regional vulnerabilities, but also identify the key sectors that they want to build upon while addressing climate concerns. Now, I would come to this as a challenge in the process. And what I have seen is that a major challenge in the implementation of the SAPCC is the lack of financial resources to do so, you know, to take the interventions identified forward. Now, in order for the SAPCC to be implemented, the document, I think, needs to come up with a financial roadmap guiding the state authorities on how climate finance can be accessed. And I saw this is the case not just with the Assam SAPCC, but a lot of SAPCCs that lack a concrete financial roadmap. And having this will ensure that the SAPCC is not just a policy document, but an actionable roadmap that can address climate concerns in the state.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is much needed. Climate finance and leveraging also the private sector. And climate finance is not only, I mean, it is very much a requirement because that is what it will make these actions sustainable. Because if there is a financial aspect of it, it will also incentivize the people to adopt, for example, adaptation or mitigation practices, which could probably propel climate action faster. And I think Mayuri also had something to add, so please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying the same thing, that at least with Assam's SAPCC, they have identified the various sectors over which climate actions and adaptation priorities could be, you know, taken up. However, when we come to the financing part of it, the section is not very practically put out there. And considering we are talking about the SAPCC, which has expired in 2020 and a new one is being formed, isn't it, Hrithi?
Yeah. I think they're revising it.
Yeah, I think we can hope that the revised SAPCC would have more inputs in the line of what we are discussing, and I'm sure the experts are also discussing in the same way.
Yes, I hope that, you know, they take this, I hope they take, in fact, challenges that the state authorities faced in, you know, addressing the previous interventions into consideration while drafting the revised version. That will definitely go a long way in making these identified interventions implementable.
Well, true. So one of the major sections within State Action Plan for Climate Change, and especially talking for the state of Assam, I think floods are one of our greatest concerns. Climate change or not, I mean, it's a disaster that we have to learn to kind of live with it and manage it and adapt to it. But how do you think How do you think disasters in the region would be impacted by climate change?
So, okay, let's talk about floods, because, you know, floods are a major disaster in Assam. And I think being from Assam, we have, since childhood, we've seen this problem and it has not been solved. There is no solution. There is a lot of literature, a lot of studies on it, but there seems to be no solution. So I'll begin by saying that, you know, floods are of two types. One is riverine, which is caused by over a river or a major river or a major water body overflowing and, you know, causing inundation in surrounding areas. The other one is urban floods or waterlogging. That is sort of an artificial flooding, which causes inundation of low-lying areas in instances of very heavy rainfall during shorter durations of time, you know, which now this has become the characteristic form of rainfall in the region, where, you know, rainfall spread over a long term is now being concentrated in a shorter period. Now, such patterns are slowly replacing earlier patterns. And in Assam, we have both these issues and in varying intensities in different regions. So, and both riverine floods and urban floods have become perennial issues for the state, occurring on an annual basis. And despite the research in these things and a, you know, very fast growing body of literature on the subject, the losses and damages for the state continue to grow. And so I think there is a lack of a structured approach towards addressing these issues, both on a short term as well as on a long term basis. We need to focus on more on actionable points that and nature-based solutions, I'd say. I think IIT Guwahati has carried out a lot of studies in this regard, especially riverine flooding of Brahmaputra.
They have, yeah.
And they have come up with, I think, nature-based solutions of, you know, planting bamboos along the banks to avoid erosion and such things. These need to be upscaled. Good practices in the state need to be upscaled and taken forward so that this problem can be mitigated at some level.
Yeah, I agree.
Can you also tell us about the importance of early warning systems in the context of floods and how will they help when
of
we
course.
Talk about...
Yeah. Yeah, early warning systems are an integral part of, you know, disaster preparedness. And we have early warning system for both kind of floods in Assam. We have riverine floods. For riverine floods, we have FLEWS, FLEWS. It was developed by the NESAC, Northeast Space Applications Center, which is headquartered in Meghalaya. And it is operational on a district level where they check the riverine flooding, and they have they look at, you know, when the danger level of the river crosses, they alert concerned authorities and actions are taken in terms of, say, evacuation of population, etc. Now, the other one for urban flooding, we have FEWS, which is FEWS, and it was developed by TERI for the cities of Guwahati and Jorhat currently, but we are looking to, you know, expand into more cities that face the similar problem in Assam. However, I would like to point out the fact that, you know, the importance of early warning systems stem from the need to provide immediate relief to citizens. Now, early warning systems are not the solution. It won't prevent floods in the future. It only will help us deal with the issue till we figure out a long-term strategy to mitigate it.
Yeah, I think along with early warning systems, we also need to think about what happens when people get that warning. I mean, for...
Exactly,
yeah. For riverine areas, exactly, the last mile connectivity, right? For urban floods, it is maybe I can take the liberty of saying that people would still be able to manage in a way. But for riverine floods and the conditions that we see in our state, we need to think more along the lines of where do people go? Is there a safe space for them? I mean, even the shelter homes that are here should have to be kind of upgraded with basic facilities, and especially with drinking water and sanitation facilities, menstrual health facilities for women. And there remains a lot to be done for post-flood and even pre-flood scenarios.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I would, this is not just about the Northeast region, but I think as a developing country, as a developing society, we are a reactive society. We are not proactive in terms of disaster preparedness, climate impacts, extreme events. We only respond to drastic climate events and disasters. When the event has struck, it is then that we move into action. And that's why I think these need to be planned ahead. And a strategy, a structured approach needs to be taken in terms of what happens when you get the warning, when you get the warning about floods, what is your first step? How do you go about evacuating? How do you go about taking your people to the safe spaces, and how equipped those safe spaces are to handle situations like Yamayuri has said, you know, basic health facilities, drinking water, sanitation, and even menstrual hygiene, which we find lacking currently in our rehabilitation homes.
True. And along with, I think we also need to put focus on our adaptive capabilities, like you have already mentioned. We have looked at floods or disasters in a very controlled disaster manner, but maybe it's time to shift towards a more adapt and mitigate to an extent point of view.
Yeah, I think we see mitigating the problem would be a long-term thing. So till you develop an approach for, you know, trying to mitigate the problem, I think short-term measures in terms of upgrading your rehabilitation facilities or having better the last mile connectivity, having better or in fact more reaction time would definitely help in getting the population to be safe, and having a lot of things under control of the state authorities so that they can manage such disasters better.
So what do you think is the way forward for the region in terms of climate action? Like the immediate short-term steps?
See, I think immediately I would definitely suggest climate-proofing or climate-resilient planning and development of infrastructure and even state policies so that our whatever progress we made in terms of development are not lost to the ravages of disasters. They are retained. And in terms of floods, we have a lot of infrastructure being just washed away. And that is a huge loss, and it is a huge drain on our already short resources that we have. It's a massive drain on that. And so I think that would definitely help. And secondly, I think we need to take better care of our existing resources, especially our water resources. I mean, the pollution of our rivers is in a very grim state, and this needs to be addressed urgently because, you know, water bodies, like Mayuri said initially, they are going through a lot of changes due to the climate, and they will be facing a lot of consequences. So at least anthropologically, we need to reduce the stress on these water bodies and reduce pollution significantly. And thirdly, of course, we should start being proactive about climate action. And we have to have increased preparedness to disasters and climate impacts.
Definitely. I think everything you mentioned are important steps which the state and the people have to take in order to be climate resilient, right? And so with that, I think we have come to the end of our show almost. But before we end it, we would ask you to share any sustainable choice that you consciously follow in your daily life. Since we discuss sustainability in our show, we ask our guests to end with a personal choice that they follow in their daily lives.
So I think a daily thing, see, climate change, you can't really do something on a daily basis that will drastically have impacts. But But I think one thing that we can do on a daily basis is segregation of waste. And this I speak especially in terms of not just Northeast, Assam and Guwahati in particular, because much of our waste ends up in our river bodies and other water bodies. And like I said, they're already facing the climate crisis. And we, as much as we can, as much as in our hands, which is pollution, I think we can, you know, curtail that.
Definitely. Solid waste management is a big urban problem for any Indian city. And definitely, like, northeastern cities are no exception to it. So that's something which is, and it's not even that hard to do once you actually make a conscious effort. So
climate proofing and adaptation can take many shapes and forms depending on the unique context of a community, be it a business, organization, country or region. Like you already said, Dhriti, there is no one-size-fits-all solution. It can range from building flood defenses, setting up early warning systems, improving agricultural practices, or even switching to drought-resistant crops. It can also take the form of redesigning communication systems, business operations, as well as government policies. It is essential to take actions at the interface of science and policy to effectively manage climate risk.
Thank you for listening to us today. Tune in next time for another discussion on logically local efforts and solutions.
Thank you, Trisanki. Thank you, Mayuri. It was great being with you two on the show. And I think it's a great initiative.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.